across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
The man's not lying. It's me. Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Wednesday, August 16th, 2023. It's National Roller Coaster Day. It's National Rum Day. I don't think you should mix the two. It's National Independent Worker Day. Coming up this hour, two conservative Wisconsin Supreme Court justices complained loudly about some changes made by the new progressive majority, but we'll talk to law professor and former state Supreme Court candidate Ed Filone, who says the changes actually return some transparency and accountability to the court. We'll also visit with Eric Gunn of the Wisconsin Examiner. He'll talk about conservative efforts by some Wisconsin Republicans and others to undermine a financial services watchdog agency. We'll talk to Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show and have much more along the way. If you'd like to reach us, our studio line is 844-967-2789. You can email us, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And if you're watching live on one of the many Facebook pages where you can see us, leave a comment. We might see that and put it up on screen as well. We prefer that you listen on your local Civic Media radio station and patronize the advertisers on there and everything. But if you can't, we're also a podcast. You can subscribe at Apple, Spotify, all the usual places. You can catch us live on the Up North News YouTube page, the Twitter page, and then the Facebook pages of Up North News, Civic Media, Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, 93.5 The Tap FM in Chippewa Falls. You've got no excuse for missing us. There's just no other way to put it. So we'd love to have you every day in one form or another. They're all good. Every one of them counts. And we thank you for your support, as they used to say on the old Bartles and James commercials. Aaron Zommers is with us in Madison as well. You mentioned to me during the break, I mean, we can't possibly get to all of the birthdays every day, but, you know, sometimes people say, well, you missed this one or that one. And James Cameron is 69 today. He's done one or two things out there in the world, hasn't he?
He's done a couple movies. He's done Avatar, Avatar 2, The Way of Water, the forthcoming Avatar 3, the forthcoming Avatar 4, the forthcoming... I don't remember how many he's contracted for, but it's a lot.
It is a lot. You know, that one lends itself to sequels. You haven't heard him do Titanic 2 yet. But
that'd be a little more difficult.
He's still known for Titanic. He first gained recognition for writing and directing The Terminator. He had success with Aliens, The Abyss, Terminator 2, and the action comedy True Lies, which, by the way, is just, it's an underrated, action comedy jewel in my mind.
I haven't actually seen that one.
I think you'd really like that one. It's got a good cast. It's got a good story. Jamie Lee Curtis, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm leaving out a few, Tom Arnold. Just a nice one where there's a lot of action, but you're also going to laugh a lot in watching it. And I did not know until this morning that is another James Cameron joint as well. So a lot to see. And I do wonder if he's doing anything else other than the Avatar movies now, and probably talking about Titanic after that recent unfortunate episode.
Yeah, I know he's successfully navigated multiple times to the Titanic. Mm-hmm. On various submersibles. And I know he had a lot to say about that. And a lot of people just shared videos, pictures, interviews with him in the past about his trips down to the Titanic. Mm-hmm. And the difference between both the craft that they used and the care and safety measures that went into the different trips is staggering.
Yeah, you don't do these things on the cheap. That's really kind of the crass way to go about doing it. But when you're doing something that dangerous, I mean, you don't go to the moon in a tin can, you know? So yeah, James Cameron's got a little bit of expertise on that. I mentioned in our last hour, but want to note it again, the passing of a Wisconsin legend. Ada Deer was 88 years old. State Democratic Party Chair Ben Wickler posted that Ada Deer passed away around 9:45 last night. She turned 88 just 8 days earlier. Surrounded by family and friends, she was a nationally recognized educator, activist, social worker, community organizer. She led the fight to restore federal recognition of the Menominee tribe in Wisconsin. She later served as head of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. She developed groundbreaking classes on Native American issues and multiculturalism at the UW-Madison School of Social Work. She was a fellow at the Harvard Institute of Politics at the John F. Kennedy School of Government. She was the first Native American to run for Congress in Wisconsin, first Native American to win a congressional primary, and she also racked up no shortage of distinguished lifetime service awards, lifetime achievement awards from the Wisconsin Alumni Association, the Wisconsin Historical Society, and others. And so, again, we just want to note the passing of Ada Deer at the age of 88. The Up North News Daily Newsletter comes out early every morning. You get a chance to subscribe to that by going to our website and clicking on Newsletter up in the top banner. And in doing so, you'll get stories that keep you up to date, including the one-year anniversary today of the Inflation Reduction Act, something that President Biden noted with a visit to Wisconsin yesterday. That was not accidental timing on the part of the president coming to a battleground state just 8 days before Republican presidential candidates debate, also in the Milwaukee area. The president did not mention Donald Trump by name. He took some digs, however, that were unavoidable, especially when it came to Trump all the time promising a big, beautiful infrastructure plan that never happened. And Biden made this offhanded quip that we turned into a meme with the aviator sunglasses when he said yesterday, "Infrastructure month? We're having an infrastructure decade, baby." We'll talk to Eric Gunn of the Wisconsin Examiner about something that's happening that could affect your pocketbook in Washington, D.C. next. You're up north. Again, it just seems odd that it's already been 5 years since we lost Aretha Franklin after a battle with pancreatic cancer at the age of 76. And it was 46 years ago today that Elvis Presley died at his home in Graceland at the age of 42. A couple of notes from this day in music history to pass along. Jennifer Wojcicki is from Weatherology, our meteorologist who joins us each morning to tell us more about what we can expect weather-wise, where things could get a little loud and wet tonight, but things sure do look nice in the long run, and here's all the details. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning, yeah. I mean, it is going to be a little bit on the louder side here for tonight, and it's going to be an interesting forecast overall here this week. Looking at that warm front fully pushing through here for today, highs in the mid to low 80s, pretty average actually for this time of the year. Sunny skies expected during the day, then a chance for those showers and storms coming in mainly late tonight for everyone, a little earlier in west central Wisconsin as that front comes in through there first. Slight risk for severe weather actually associated with that around Amory and Baldwin, and then a marginal risk from Wausau down to, through Richland Center. So definitely something we'll keep you posted on as we get through the day today. Thursday cooler as the cold front briefly pushes through tomorrow. Highs drop into the mid to upper 70s for most. Sunny skies for the western half of the state. A chance for storms early for the central and eastern parts of the state, then becoming sunny for the day. Some areas of haze for tomorrow as well, so something to keep in mind. Friday, it looks like sunny skies and just slightly warmer, upper 70s to low 80s mostly. Then a warm front fully pushes through here for the weekend with a significant increase in temperatures. Sunny all weekend, 90 expected for the whole weekend from Richland Center up towards Amory and Baldwin. Then for Wausau, Wisconsin Rapids, Madison, and eastward, mid to upper 80s Saturday, then getting into the 90s by Sunday.
Oh, looking forward to that very much. Jennifer, thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too.
There's Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology. Temperatures across Wisconsin right now include Rhinelander coming in at 62 degrees, Baldwin 61, Fond du Lac 62. Sparta is at 50 degrees. Dodgers rookie pitcher Bobby Miller gave up only one hit, and it was off his very first pitch of the ballgame, a single to Christian Yelich. He shut the Brewers down after that. He went six innings. He retired the final 18 batters in a row that he faced. The Dodgers went on to beat the Brewers by a score of 6-2. Carlos Santana did have a 442-foot blast in the seventh inning for the Brewers. Wade Miley will get the start tonight in Chavez Ravine, Dodger Stadium, where you can hear that game on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM, and news from the center in Richland Center, 107.7 FM, two of the Brewer stations here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is quite an honor for me to finally get to welcome in Eric Gunn, the deputy editor of the Wisconsin Examiner. We've had Ruth Conniff on a couple of times, where Ruth has also, much like Aaron or Eric has to do now, is put up with basically a fan club mentality here. I've been a fan of the Wisconsin Examiner for since it first logged on about 6 months before Up North News did, and they just put together a first-class product, top to bottom, covering Wisconsin news and politics. Obviously, we tried to do the same at Up North News. We think that you've got time in your day to be reading both, because I never miss the Wisconsin Examiner, which you'll find at wisconsinexaminer.com. And Eric's on because one of the articles that caught my eye recently from him is headlined, "Report Criticizes Lawmakers Who Challenged Consumer Watchdog's Funding and Took Campaign Money from the Industries It Regulates." Eric Gunn, good morning. Thanks for being here.
I'm glad to be here, Pat.
So, Eric, can you explain a bit more about this? This is something that deals with a watchdog agency called the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB. And it was something that was found to really be necessary after the Great Recession. But almost as soon as it was created, now former Congressman Sean Duffy was very instrumental in being one of its leading critics and trying to dismantle it. But even though Sean Duffy has gone from Congress, other Wisconsin Republicans are still out there hammering away at this watchdog agency. What is it that led to the report that you have in the Wisconsin Examiner this week?
Well, it all starts with how the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, it's kind of a mouthful, is funded. The idea when Congress set it up, and this was the brainchild, by the way, of now Senator Elizabeth Warren, when it was set up, there was concern that it could easily be subject to the political winds and therefore not, which would not be in the best interest of the consumers that it was set up to protect. So, to avoid that, the designers of this legislation, of this agency, said, let's fund it through the Federal Reserve, which gets its funding from from fees that banks pays. And there are some other things that get funded that way. The one that we're probably most familiar with is the FDIC, which insures all of our bank deposits, right? But because it is funded through the Federal Reserve rather than through the conventional appropriation system in Congress, lots of folks who would rather it not be funded at all use that as an excuse to attack it. There's a provision in Article 1 that talks about appropriations all coming through Congress. And so they're using that to try to make the case against the current funding system and therefore basically kneecap the agency. So the payday lending industry has a lobbying group, as of course all kinds of different trades do. And they filed a suit against a regulation that the Bureau had initiated. They filed a suit in 2017 against a regulation aimed at the payday lending industry. And at that lawsuit was thrown out completely, but it's gotten revived. And this time, unlike the first time, at the appeal stage, they've been attacking this funding mechanism that I've just discussed. And so that's where, that's where things stand now. An appeals court actually upheld the attack on the funding system, and now it's going to be in front of the Supreme Court in October.
And so where does that bring in Republican members of Congress Brian Stile and Scott Fitzgerald?
They
signed on to a brief related to the lawsuit.
That's exactly it. They've been instrumental in legislation in the current Congress that would try to legislatively defund the agency. But in the meantime, they and some 130 other members of Congress signed onto a friend of the court brief, siding with the payday lending industry against the funding system that this agency uses, and arguing with the court that the Constitution simply doesn't allow this way of funding this agency.
And yet they've managed to accept a few dollars here and there from the financial industries that make political contributions.
Exactly. And that's what the report that came out last week from this organization called Accountable US, a nonprofit in Washington, that looks at the way corporations influence politics and government, and in their view, blunt progressive laws and policies, took a look at. So what are the biggest critics of the Bureau and of this funding, and people who had signed on to this friend of the court brief? How are they, where do they get their campaign money from? And they found a huge pattern of large donations over the careers of these various members of Congress by banking industries, by the payday lending industry, by other related financial industries that are regulated by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
And in Brian Stiles' case, that includes, your reporting shows, $1.2 million in contributions from financial industries regulated by the Bureau, which to me is, some may consider this a flawed comparison, but it would be like Congress monkeying with the funding for the FAA while they're taking money from groups that want airplanes to be made less safely. This is a Bureau that you note in your story has helped more than 22,000 Wisconsin residents. Those residents have recovered more than $7 million through the agency's enforcement actions. There's been so much attention on Republicans in Congress attacking the Bureau that sometimes we lose sight of why Elizabeth Warren and others thought the Bureau needed to be created in the first place. And that's to look out for everyday Americans who otherwise get nickeled and dimed by these, you know, lenders and banks.
One of the things that's interesting, the Accountable U.S., when they put out their report, also went through and dug public statements and tweets and so on from some of these members of Congress. Scott Fitzgerald put out a tweet, and I want to find it exactly how he describes it. He signed on to legislation which he says makes the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau accountable to small business.
Well, that doesn't sound right. It feels like it should be accountable to ordinary Americans and not to business people.
Well, and the use of small business there is really kind of interesting. I don't know that any big payday lending chains would meet anybody's criteria for small business in a rational analysis of the situation.
So the case itself is going to be heard by the U.S. Supreme Court coming up in October. So the lawsuit will make its way through, but at least it's, you know, folks now have an idea of what Republican members of Congress who've, you know, signed on to, you know, briefs, a friend of the court briefs in this lawsuit, they now have an idea of where some of these folks are getting their funding, their campaign donations, even as they continue to, you know, attack this Bureau that looks out for American consumers. Now, Eric also has recent stories about Governor Evers and the special session call to finish work on the state budget. And in a minute, Eric, we're not going to have enough time to do justice to it, but you have a story about how a state Senate panel, voted to kill a building code update that supporters say would save energy. But on this first anniversary of the Inflation Reduction Act, it seems worth noting that the Inflation Reduction Act would help local and state governments upgrade their building codes, but these state Senate Republicans said they don't need it, don't want it.
Well, it's the building code change is actually coming from an international group, and something like almost half the states have adopted this building code change. It raises the standards for energy efficiency and other things, and because of that, as well as creating other safety measures, increasing the number of sprinklers required in commercial buildings and so on. So, but some folks decided that that was just too much to ask of these small companies. And so
consequently, we don't get that building code update, at least at this point. Eric Gunn of the Wisconsin Examiner, wisconsinexaminer.com. Get out there, subscribe, donate, support the work that he and the whole team do out there. Thanks so much, Eric. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Talk to you again soon. Back with Ed Filone after this. You're up north.
Well, when he took us into court, I couldn't believe my eyes. The judge was a fishing buddy that I recognized. I said, hey, judge, old buddy, old pal, I'll pay you that $100 if you get me out of this spot. So he gave my friends a little fine to pay. He turned around and grinned at me and said, 90 days, Jerry, when you were hot, you were hot. And I said, thanks a lot, when you're hot, you're hot.
I don't have any good bumper music for Supreme Courts, so I just had to go with one of my favorites about a judge by Jerry Reed. Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University, Ed Filone, also a former state Supreme Court candidate, joins us now, and we're going to talk about the new progressive majority on the court and some of the changes that it has brought that are maybe positive, but certainly did not come without, shall we say, some protest. Ed, how are you this morning?
I'm good, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Hey, nice to talk to you again. Look, we knew that the change in control after 15 plus years of conservative control of the court was bound not to go smoothly, simply because there was already tension between the existing justices. The record's very clear on that. You can see the pointed words in dissents and in rulings, but now it's spilled over into tweets and radio talk shows and all of that. So we wanted to explain some of the background of it. So Ed Janet Protasiewicz is sworn into office a couple of weeks back, changes control of the court. There are now four progressive justices and three conservative ones. So what were the couple of things that the progressive justices did? And did you feel like they were good moves? Can you explain what they did?
Certainly, Pat. And you know, we shouldn't be surprised at what's going on at the Wisconsin Supreme Court, because the liberal justices, now that they're in the majority, are simply doing what they've been promising to do when they ran as candidates and what they've been arguing and trying to do for over a decade. So we've got not just Justice Protasiewicz, but Justice Kurofsky, Justice Dalit, who all ran as candidates, pledging to reform the rules that govern when justices have to step down and recuse themselves, not participate in a case, particularly when you have a major campaign donor who's a party to the case. It's just common sense. I think the Jerry Reed song you played at the intro made reference to paying a judge. Yeah. And it's really, the conservatives over a decade ago changed the rules at the bequest of special interest groups, the Wisconsin Realtors Association and others, to permit justices to sit on cases that are brought by or involve major campaign donors. And candidates, liberal candidates for the court have been decrying that. Nonpartisan groups have been decrying that, like the League of Women Voters, Common Cause Wisconsin. Members of the legal community have been decrying that. We need to have common sense rules that require justices to step down in cases that involve major campaign donors. And so now, finally, the liberals are in a majority and they're doing what they promised. Why is anyone surprised? They shouldn't be. And similarly, the other big issue is transparency. Under Chief Justice Shirley Abramson, the court had opened up its administrative conferences to public viewing on the Wisconsin Eye public access channel. And that's important because, you know, all three branches of our government should operate in the open. And when I ran for the state Supreme Court, yes, it would be nice to be one of those justices deciding those important cases. But for me, the most important part of the job on that Supreme Court is running our Wisconsin court system and all sorts of administrative matters, from ethical rules for judges, which include the recusal rules I talked about, to security in courthouses, accessibility in courthouses for disabled people, availability of information for individuals who are representing themselves without a lawyer and making sure they can get through the legal process with assistance. Budgeting issues, you know, how much money is the court system going to ask for from the state legislature? Staffing, who you're going to hire to run important parts of the program. A variety of important issues that have to be decided to make our justice system work better. And yet, when the conservatives took control, they stopped holding these administrative conferences in the open.
And in doing so, you took away that transparency. You took away that notion of accountability. So again, all the progressives did was revert back to better past practices. And yet to hear Chief Justice Annette Ziegler and Justice Rebecca Bradley, you would have thought somebody had lit their hair on fire. And while they could say all of the right-wing talk radio things, they could throw out all of the name-calling, from a matter of substance, they couldn't really make the case that this was some kind of a radical change.
That's right. It's really, as you put it, a reversion back to good governance at the court. And again, common sense provisions that many in the legal community and in the nonpartisan world have been pushing for. I think it's just indicative, the rhetoric, the way that, you know, when the liberals take power and exercise that power, the response is turned up to an 11, dialed up to 11. I think it's just indicative of the continuing inability of the two sides of the court. Well, I should say the three sides of the court are unable to talk to each other. The conservatives don't trust the liberals. The liberals don't trust the conservatives. And no one trusts Justice Hagedorn because because he is the one justice who seems to approach cases on a one-by-one individual basis and is unpredictable and therefore equally despised by both sides.
Isn't that something? So you see reactions like this one out of the Wisconsin State Journal. They quote Michael Kang, a law professor at Northwestern University, who says the Wisconsin Supreme Court is kind of the most glaring example of how state Supreme Courts are becoming more politicized and more partisan. The election process is becoming more partisan and putting more pressure on the justices. And you hear about things becoming more strained at the personal level on different Supreme Courts. Now, I'm not taking issue with all of what he is saying, but I'm always going to be the first one to point out the double standard out there. And that is, why is it always the pressure is on progressives to be nice and to get along and to acquiesce? And yet when conservatives removed accountability and transparency measures, I don't recall hearing nearly that much criticism. It just seems like the double standard is again at play, and that this animosity is not necessarily a two-way street. It started somewhere.
It did, and you can, I mean, most observers of our state Supreme Court go back to the campaign of Michael Gableman against Justice Butler, our first African-American Supreme Court justice, who was widely known for having lunch with all the members of the court across the political spectrum and for reaching out and trying to be a collaborative justice. And what the Gableman campaign demonstrated was that if you could pour in about, you know, $5 to $10 million on racist TV ads, you could knock off a justice and put a conservative in that position. And that really politicized the judicial races. It raised the stakes substantially. It raised the amount of money that started pouring into these races. But let's remember, you know, remember it was Justice Prosser who put his hands around the neck of Justice Bradley. and the conservatives said, well, technically it wasn't choking. It was just putting hands around the neck. And it was the conservatives who, you know, as soon as Republicans pushed through an amendment to the state constitution permitting the Chief Justice to be elected rather than chosen based on seniority, it was the conservatives on the court who immediately got together and deposed Justice Shirley Abramson. They didn't have to. but they did. So yeah, it's been a lot of tit for tat in an ever escalating fashion, but it started a long time ago and both sides bear a lot of responsibility.
And I don't want to necessarily frame this as tit for tat, but I will say again, in a mocking term, you know, in a mocking tone that evokes back to Casablanca, that the conservative justices, Ziegler and Rebecca Bradley, were shocked, I tell you, to discover that, you know, the way that they took and acquiesced taking powers away from Governor-elect Evers and Governor-elect Josh Call, that they too could have powers and responsibilities taken away, but again, they operated through a majority rule, and so that really shouldn't have been so shocking.
No, I mean, you're talking to a guest who had a lot of his power taken away on the Milwaukee Fire and Police Commission. That seems to be politics today. It's really about the partisan groups trying to get ownership of branches and institutions of government. And reacting when their perceived ownership and control of that branch or institution is challenged, reacting as if someone had broken into their home and robbed them. It's just we have to remember Wisconsin has strong progressive roots, and that means a firm belief in government by the people, self-government, and to have special interest groups or partisan groups claim ownership of government institutions. I mean, that's the sort of thing that spurred the progressive movement back in the early 1900s, when railroads essentially, you know, bought and sold legislators and ran the state house in secret and passed bills without telling anyone. I mean, we're definitely in a situation where our ability to participate and observe in our own government is constantly under challenge. So you have to cut through the rhetoric and the hyperbole and the hypocrisy, and look at what's really going on.
And to do that is going to require a measure of leadership. And now, former Supreme Court Justice Jeanine Gieske, again, said in the Wisconsin State Journal that the onus was on the Chief Justice to bring the court together. She said, as a leader, when you've got this kind of thing going on, you need everybody to get to the table and talk about it. It just appears to me that we should not hold our breath waiting for a conservative chief justice who's in the minority and has said things as strongly as she has. I don't think we should hold our breath necessarily waiting for her to be the person who brings that court out of a dark, divided era. Unless you think she's got it in her. I mean, we could leave the door open for it. I'm not first in line to take that position.
I agree with former Justice Jeanine Gieske and just about anything she says. And
yes.
I tell her every time I see her, I tell her I wish she was still on the court.
Same.
I would sleep better. Mm-hmm. I don't have any criticism of Justice Ziegler as an individual or as a justice. But what I do recognize is on the conservative side, there's a system that's developed, and it's the election of our judges and the way the conservative judges get elected. It's really been, for the most part, on the conservative side, a turnkey operation where the money comes first and the money is collected, and then the people behind the money search around to try and find which candidate they want to put that money behind. And so there's a real recognition, I think, of judges on the conservative side who are either on the court or thinking of running for the court, that, you know, these big donors pick and choose who's going to be the conservative candidate. And you have to stay on the side of these big donors or you don't play in the game. And that really ties into the recusal rules that need changing. On the liberal side, you know, it's a free for all. I mean, I threw my hat in the ring twice to run for the court. No one was begging me to do it. And certainly no one came forward with a checkbook and started underwriting it. So it's very different on the conservative side. So they just have developed this system where the money picks and chooses their own candidates. It started with Gableman and it's just continued. And it's not good. And so everything we talk about the court and reform at the court, lurking in the background is the question of elections, how we run our elections, how we fund our elections for judges, because it all comes down to that in the end.
There is so much that so many times I hearken back to that late 90s decision by Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce to run so-called issue ads. And the floodgates were open long before Citizens United, when WMC was able to take all this big business cash and do what they've done to Wisconsin politics, to the legislature, to our Supreme Court as well. Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University, Ed Filone. Ed, so great to talk to you again. We'll do it again soon, I'm sure, as we're monitoring this new progressive majority in the court.
Okay, well, great. Anytime, just ask. Mm-hmm. I'll be here.
You got it, Ed. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You
we'll
too.
Take a break here. Todd Alba from the conveniently named Todd Alba Show is up next. You're up north.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Judge, over the old pal. If you wouldn't wear that black robe, I'd take you out back of this courthouse, and I'd try a little bit of your honor on. Do you understand that, you hillbilly? Who's going to collect my welfare? Pay for my Cadillac? What do you mean, contempt of court?
Well, I can't wait to hear about this one. But first, I'm going to tell you that tomorrow on Hometown Health here on Up North News Radio, we'll talk about the activities being done by the Climate Change Commission of Door County and the one thing you can do to help mitigate the problems that come with a changing climate. So join Dr. Lyerly and me for that tomorrow morning at 7:30. But now apparently we're heading into the danger zone here with Todd Alba.
Well, we've exited the danger zone. Todd was in the danger zone yesterday.
Yes. Oh, dear. Why were you in the danger zone yesterday?
Well, we did the show live from Volk Field in beautiful Juneau County in central Wisconsin, home of Northern Lightning, a nationwide training, I don't want to call it an exhibition, but a training exercise with fighter pilots from all over the country. And we are right on the, well, we're right beside the tarmac inside of a building looking out. We had a General May, the Brigadier General of the Wisconsin Air National Guard, and even an F-35 pilot who has served several deployments overseas and been a part of the Navy and now part of the Wisconsin Air National Guard. So we got to talk to an actual pilot. It was pretty cool.
So along those lines, I'm a little bit surprised that I'm still here because of military flights. Because I put up a Facebook post last evening after watching this big old plane. It came over kind of low and it flew away. And then it came over kind of low and it went away. And it did it again. And I finally looked up. I've got an app called Flight Radar and found that it was an Air Force Cobra 45, a big old Air Force plane. And based on the map, that it had flown up from Omaha and was just doing circles between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls. It was just going in circles over and over again, which I don't know if it was a training flight.
Maybe it was part of this Northern Lightning.
It could have been. Did they drop something and they were circling around looking for it? Because I put in my post, I said, you could get an Apple AirTag, you know, to help you find these things better. But anyway, I figured once I put up the flight path of an Air Force plane, there'd be a knock on my door and that I would not be doing this show this morning. So the fact that I'm here is
but nobody came.
A great relief. Apparently nobody cared about a post that Pat Kreitlow puts up on Facebook. What are you up to today on the show?
Well, we've got Trigby Olson in from the Lincoln Project to talk a little bit. We did not talk a lot about the Trump indictment because, you know, when you're on a military base, they try very hard to keep that a non-political event. So we did. I thought it was interesting. General Kelly did allow us to talk yesterday with him about what Tommy Tuberville has done down in Alabama. Of course, U.S. Senator from Alabama holding up all these military appointments over his position on abortion. Never happened before. There are three positions of the Joint Chairman Chief or the Joint Chiefs of Staff that are vacant right now. But as General Kelly said, that trickles down all the way down through the Wisconsin military. And this is putting a tremendous strain on families in the military throughout Wisconsin and other places. So we'll talk a little bit about that with Trigby, but also, so we held off on the indictment because I didn't want to make it too political yesterday. So we'll talk to Trigby about that. Also preview a little bit. Next week, Trigby will be here in Wisconsin, along with his boss, Rick Wilson, from the Lincoln Project. We will be in Milwaukee previewing the Republican presidential debate. We'll see who's there, but we'll talk about that. And then on the lighter side, the 2:30 hour, former classmate from Richland Center, who went on to have much more successful than Toddy and was a large part of The Onion for years, and he did very fine. Thank you very much. And now he's basically doing a glorified garage sale, not just in New York, but online. So we'll have a little segment called Joe's Junk and see what he's selling out there in New York.
Leave it to somebody who worked for The Onion to come up with just the right segment title for something like this.
Exactly.
You know, so with the debate coming up next week, it's still an open question whether Trump shows up, if he thinks that there's some kind of show business surprise value in showing up, if he tries to counter program with some kind of alternative rally or something, or if he actually does lay low and just, you know, tweets about the whole thing. Where do you stand on how you think next week's debate in Milwaukee is going to play out?
I still think Trump waits until the night before and says, you know what, my people won't be there. How can I not be there? I mean, he's a whore for press. So, I mean, I think he probably shows up at the last minute, but I do think it's a slightly smaller chance now with this latest indictment. To your point, I mean, on Monday, what he's doing, a so-called press event in Bedminster out in New Jersey on Monday, trying to steal some thunder, saying he's going to show all this proof where he's exonerated. Of course, that's a bunch of bunk. And then there'll be Tuesday, and then the debate is on Wednesday. So I don't know. I still think he shows. How about you?
I think I did not know he was going to Bedminster. I'm hoping that several people there show up with shovels and say, can we take a look at Ivana's gravesite again? Because there's something really weird about burying your ex-wife on your golf course, you know, in the middle of nowhere in a casket that apparently weighed a lot looking at the pallbearers, yet she was cremated. So I want to know how many documents are in this thing. And does that sound wacky and conspiratorial? Yes. Is it rooted in at least something from Donald Trump's past? Absolutely.
No, I think you're absolutely right. So
I mean, you can't write that. You can't. If you were writing a book, they'd say no way. But yet with Donald Trump, yeah, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
No, it's not. And so, yeah, he said he was, I think it's to your point, he's doing this thing on Monday to steal some thunder away from the Republican debate in Milwaukee on Wednesday. And he said he's going to show quote unquote proof that he'll be totally exonerated. But again, just Trump hyperbole. Freudian slip there. But anyway, that's coming up on Monday. I think, though, I only heard about the last 45 minutes of your show this morning. I'm not sure if you hit on the Wisconsin connection to all this, or maybe you did it yesterday. And the Brian, and of course, Brian Schimming is somebody that Trigvy and I knew for a long time. He is now the Republican Party. And the old Shim Sham Man found his name in these indictments. And you read through it. And again, Pat, this is why I left the Republican Party, because this party has continually shown not just the ability, but the willingness, the want to disenfranchise voters in Wisconsin. And when you look and read that and see what Schimming was involved with, Jim Troupas and our Andrew Hitt, a Richland Center native, and other people, quite frankly, it's appalling and disgusting. And of course, they mask all this by saying, well, we weren't going to use this unless we got a Supreme Court decision that allowed it. In other words, the Supreme Court stealing the election. Right. It's disgusting.
Well, and that's where I thought we were very fortunate to have Ed Filon on in our last segment here, again, reminding people that these aren't some wild radical changes that the progressive justices made upon taking control, but returning some transparency and accountability that Shirley Abramson brought to the court many years back. And, you know, Wisconsin is a lesser place without Shirley Abramson and without Ada Deer, who passed away last evening. You had these pioneers in public service as opposed to partisan politics. And those of us who are still old enough to remember people like those two ladies, like Val Phillips and others, we know we're in their debt and are trying to do what we can to keep that legacy alive. But sometimes it really feels swimming upstream against a torrent of campaign cash out there.
The good news is, Pat, for all the bad news is out there, and of course we have an obligation to talk about that, there's also a lot of good out there. And that's why I was reminded, I asked off the record, I'm not going to say who it was, I asked someone yesterday in the military base at Volk Field, I said, do you see this white nationalism permeating the military here? And this individual said, no. I think we all are here for a mission, and we don't care about that. He had no reason to lie, and the good news is we're all Wisconsinites, we're all Americans.
Here's hoping. All right, catch Todd this afternoon starting at 1. Thank you, sir. Talk to you later. All right, thank you for joining us. We'll see you back here after you have a great Wednesday. We'll be back here Thursday morning, 6 a.m. Have a wonderful day.